This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The U.S. has female athletes dominating sports of all sorts, and millions of fans are tuning in to watch. From the Women's NCAA Championship to the WNBA and the Paris Olympics, viewership for women's sports is on the rise. Joining me now to talk about the reasons behind that and what it could mean for women's sports overall are Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Law, Tan Boston. Thanks for being here, Tan.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is so exciting, especially given the Olympics going on right now.
Yeah, we're watching all this winning. It's great. And senior writer for The Athletic covering sports media, Richard Deitch. Thanks for being here, Richard.
Appreciate the invite. Thank you.
Women Olympians from the U.S. could be on track to win more medals than male Olympians this year, and women's NCAA basketball games and the WNBA have been getting many, many more TV viewers in recent years. Tan, what does that all tell you about women's sports and the trajectory it's on?
It tells me that we're seeing a lot of excellence these days, and it's always been there. And so I think that's what it's telling us. It's telling us that for a long time, women's sports have been at their best, but we just haven't seen it.
Mm. And Richard, are television networks and sponsors becoming bigger believers in the appeal and the power of women's sports?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the old Watergate adage, follow the money. And in this case, you can easily do that. When it comes to viewership, probably the most, the most significant example of this in the last 12 months was the NCAA women's college basketball final, where you saw South Carolina beating Iowa. Obviously, Caitlin Clark, very, very well-known player for Iowa. That drew a shade under 19 million viewers for ABC/ESPN. I mean, those are National Football League numbers. And these networks and these companies, obviously, they sell advertising to sponsors based on what kind of viewership they think that they can get. So when you see an explosion like this, we've sort of seen this continue with the Olympics, we've seen WNBA viewership, double, almost quadruple this year. It's an amazing time for women's sports. It's always, quite frankly, been an undervalued asset. And now the financial community is kind of catching up.
We're discussing how viewership of women's sports is on the rise and what that could mean for female athletes. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Tan, what role do you think Title IX has played in the growth and elevation of women's sports? You mentioned we've had these tremendously talented women athletes for years now. Title IX was a big part of that, right?
Absolutely. So Title IX applies to educational institutions and programs. And as we know, athletics is a major program within our colleges and universities. And so what it's done is it has required schools to make investments in women's sports. And I think, you know, initially we didn't see as many schools wanting to make those investments. And now when we get here today, we see schools now recognize the value of women's sports, and that's why we've had so much viewership of the women's championships, and now we're seeing that seep into the Olympics and other arenas. And so Title IX has been invaluable for that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Paris Olympics. Richard, there's been a lot of talk about how these games reached gender parity, where half the athletes are women for the first time. How equal is it really, though? I mean, what kind of job is the International Olympic Committee doing when it comes to showcasing women's sports on prime time?
Yeah, well, let's hold off on giving any awards to the IOC. generally speaking, they're an awful organization that happens to put on, you know, one of the great events globally, and that's the Olympics. But what is interesting, and I give NBC credit for this, There are researchers that every Olympic cycle really go very, very detailed in terms of how much time women athletes get on prime time, how much minutes male athletes get on prime time. Now, of course, NBC during these Olympics, they're covering it essentially 24/7. You get all the live coverage on Peacock, but you know, as a researcher, you have to obviously pick something that you can do. So the researchers pick prime time. And what they have shown through at least the first 11 days of the Olympics, I don't know if they did it based on yesterday, were women athletes were featured in primetime, I think 51 or 52%. So a little bit more than the men, but that to me shows significant gender equity when it comes to this. But, and again, this is where I don't want to give sort of NBC too many flowers. The reality is, again, this is commerce. Some of the biggest names in the Olympics are women. I would argue the most famous athlete coming in was Simone Biles. I don't even think you could quite frankly argue that. And then you have other athletes who are certainly, in terms of recognizability, top five in terms of Olympic athletes. You know, Katie Ledecky would be in that top five. So when it comes to NBC, it's fantastic that they're showing sort of both genders in the sports. They're also a business, and they know that there is such significant interest when it comes to some of these women athletes. And I'll just give you one last stat because it's pretty fascinating. So during the day, NBC showed the women's gymnastics coverage live. And for the all rounds on one day, they got 11 million viewers in the afternoon. Just that's on linear television. Think about how extraordinary that is. And the reason they got that was because there's massive interest in Simone Biles and Suni Lee and Jade Carey. So, you know, NBC, I think, again, is just in many ways following what their audience is demanding. And right now their audience is demanding a lot of exposure for women athletes.
Wonder how many people ditched work to watch that.
I would venture to say the U.S. economy maybe took a little bit of a work hit on that.
I hope I'm not telling on you, Tan, if I say you raised your hand when I asked that question.
You are telling on
okay.
me.
What do you think about this kind of parody, this gender parody storyline, Tan? There's been a lot made of the number of women athletes compared to the number of male athletes in this Olympics. Do those numbers tell the story, do you think? What should we be looking at when it comes to figuring out whether there is gender parity in these Olympics?
And so I think in the Olympics, for sure, we're seeing a lot more gender parity than we perhaps see at the collegiate level even, right? And so it's just so promising that we're getting to a point where the public is demanding it. And it doesn't matter now as much, you know, that it's women's sports because they are just as excellent. They're showing just as much ability as the men. And that's why people want to see it.
Yeah. Tan, you've done lots of scholarly research on name, image, and likeness for collegiate athletes. What kind of opportunities do name, image, and likeness rules and policies open up for women athletes in particular?
And so when the NCAA changed its policies in 2021, we saw an explosion of NIL. I call it NIL, deals large and small. And so the good part of that is that it brought more exposure to female athletes, which then brought more exposure to their teams. And so I feel that NIL was an amazing, amazing step for the NCAA to take. And I think perhaps it's what's driving some of the increased interest in, you know, women's sports generally, because now you're seeing these female athletes everywhere.
Tan, do women athletes benefit from NIL as much as male athletes? I guess I'm wondering, are superstars like, you know, Simone Biles, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, are they the outliers, or are women benefiting just as much as men?
I would be happy to see the day when women athletes are benefiting as much as men in NIL, but we're just not there yet. We are seeing some outliers, the Caitlin Clarks, the Angel Reese's. Definitely there are some outliers, but I think we could definitely do better from an NIL perspective for female women athletes. Mm.
Do you think anybody will ever get to kind of the Michael Jordan level when it comes to female athletes? I mean, everybody thinks about the sneakers and the massive impression that his name, image, and likeness made in the as an NBA player.
I'd like to think that absolutely we are headed in that direction. And we've heard Simone Biles' name, you know, many times throughout this broadcast. And I just think that maybe not today, but definitely sometime in the near future, we will see that level of stardom from a women athlete.
Richard, you know, we were just talking about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Let's talk about the WNBA. There are some people who seem to think the rivalry between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese really fueled the growing interest in NCAA women's basketball when they were in college. And now that it's helping, that they're in the WNBA, that it's really helping to fuel interest there. What do you think? What role have the two of those players played in all that?
Well, you know, this was an extraordinary draft class for the WNBA between Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Cam Brink, you know, Kia Jackson. I could sort of go on and on and on. And so And you know, the professor hit on this. We're, because of NIL, and because we are now in a, you know, sort of multiple generations after Title IX, a lot of the women who play college basketball, in particular, are really, really well known. I mean, they've become national figures, and so that exposure, and Caitlin Clark is obviously the perfect example. That exposure has helped fuel more interest in the WNBA. And then when you get to storyline a little bit, and obviously Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark played famously in college, and since then they've gone on to play in the WNBA, and their games are among the top five most watched games viewership-wise this year. So yeah, I do think that, you know, I had Sue Bird on my podcast before the WNBA season started, obviously, you know, one of the iconic women's basketball players in United States history. And one of the things she said in terms of what the WNBA needs in terms of additional growth is they need rivalries. They need rivalries between teams, and they need rivalries between players. And so this has really helped them, in my opinion, because you are taking a mass audience that watch these two in college basketball, and all you quite frankly need is 10%, 20% of that audience to just sample them when it comes to the WNBA. And that game changes the WNBA's audience. I'll give you something that's really, really interesting just in my world. The WNBA has had 17 games this year that have drawn more than 1 million viewers. That's far and away a record for them. They have had seasons where they had no games that drew more than 1 million viewers. And I would say that's honestly a direct result of Caitlin Clark, one, and then Caitlin Clark, and add some of these other, you know, really, really interesting rookies when it comes to this year.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a minute, though, with you, Richard, because I wonder, does the focus on these rookies, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, some of these other amazing collegiate players, does that shortchange the WNBA stars of the past that came before Clark and Reese in any way?
Well, I mean, the reality is just in the world that, like, you know, and again, I covered women's basketball for many, many years at Sports Illustrated. So I feel like, you know, not I feel like, the reality is I was ahead of the curve on this stuff because, you know, I was covering Maya Moore in college and Candace Parker and people like that. So I kind of saw that, like, this was going to eventually explode. I wish the, you know, the Cheryl Millers and the Shamiqua Holtzclaws and, you know, the Annie Myers, like, sort of, you know, got their due at the time. But I think the professor would agree with me. We were unfortunately just in a different era in the United States. There was no such thing as NIL. Their games were not, certainly in Ann Meyer's case, like, you know, Ann Donovan back then, the games were not on television. And yeah, like, they didn't get to cash in on what will now be very, very lucrative for women who are in their early 20s and certainly girls who are, you know, becoming basketball stars now as teenagers. But you have to, what you do is, you know, you hopefully you pay homage to them and give them credit because they laid the bricks and the groundwork for where we are today.
What do you think, Tan?
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. I don't have too much to add to that.
Yeah, I saw you nodding your head. Yeah. Tan, advertisers and sponsors, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but they don't typically invest money into sports because of arguments for gender equity. You know, Richard referenced the follow the money kind of thing. They make business decisions. What do you think the massive TV ratings for things like the NCAA women's basketball tournament, you know, these bigger ratings for the WNBA, what do you think all of that will mean for the future of those kinds of investments from advertisers and sponsors?
It's essentially making the business case that these advertisers want to see. We know that viewership drives advertising dollars, and we're seeing a tremendous explosion in viewership, so there's really no reason not to invest.
Yeah. What do you think, Richard?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, I can tell you sort of on a, like, a writ small position at The Athletic, you know, I think we're doing more stories because I think as an organization, I think we're thoughtful when it comes to covering as much sports as we can. But there's also a business element to it. There are more advertisers now who want to have their businesses connected to women's sports. One of the things, and I'm sure the professor has seen this too, one of the things you're really seeing now is you're seeing a lot of women-owned production companies, women-owned sports marketing agencies, and they're placing money into the women's sports base. You're also seeing, and this is where sort of Title IX really, really sort of hits home, you now have a generation of women who made some pretty good money when they were professional athletes. Sue Bird is one, Megan Rapinoe, et cetera. They now have, Serena Williams, obviously a great example. They now have the money to like invest in products. So you've seen a lot of high profile women athletes like own sports teams now. You see them own their own production companies. They can then start dictating their money that they earned into women's sports. And that's game changing because basically forever, it was just, let's face it, it was dudes who were just investing in men's sports. Now the calculation has changed. What I think will inevitably happen, and I think you're already seeing it, is they're going to make money on this. And then you're going to get bigger companies that see this and be like, hey, not only is this probably just good for our public relations and optics, we can actually make some money on this, so we should invest in women's sports.
Tan, how important do you think that has been to have women in those business decision-making positions?
Absolutely. I think the reason we haven't seen significant investment in women's sports up to this point is because, unfortunately, men have been driving the dollars. And so now that we see these players that have been very successful and that are now in a position to drive those dollars to women's sports, now we're going to see a lot more of that.
Well, and this question might be related to that, but Tan, why do you think it's taken so long for NCAA women's basketball and for the WNBA to get the kind of attention those games are getting now?
Right. I think there, you know, definitely there have been some structural issues regarding sexism and the ability of people to believe in women's sports, right? So perhaps they haven't had the opportunity to grow that men's sports had when they were in their infancy. And so now we're kind of seeing people willing to take those risks and make those investments again because the business case is being made and it's undeniable.
Yeah. Richard, do you think the women superstars of basketball, just to pick one sport, will ever make the same kind of money their male counterparts do?
You know, I'll answer that in a second, but I thought, Tan made a really good point there in the fact that you ultimately need women in leadership and sort of powership places in order to sort of push the dollars heading forward. And that, again, gets back to sort of something generationally. You have more women as CEOs. You have more women in corporate entities. Ultimately, that's going to present a better case for women's sports. In terms of the popularity metric, like the reality is, in many cases, it's just math. Like I heard your question about Michael Jordan, and I thought it was, you know, an interesting question. And my answer would be no. And it has nothing to do with the fact that, like, these women aren't stars. I mean, again, like I said, I covered women's basketball for a long, long time. I have incredible admiration for these athletes. But the NBA just has a massive audience in the billions when it comes globally, in the multiple millions when it comes domestically. So it would be very hard for a woman in the WNBA just to sort of achieve the same kind of level of fame that a LeBron James would, or quite frankly, the level of money that a LeBron James could get, because the media companies just recently signed a deal with the NBA that runs, you know, $76 billion over 11 years. So in some ways, it's just economics and in terms of that comparison. But what I would say, and this is like a really good sign, is look at the popularity of someone like Caitlin Clark or Simone Biles or Serena Williams in like a 2024 construct compared to like 1984 and compared to what their equivalents then, or 1994, their equivalents then would be making money, what kind of marketing might they would have. And that's where the game has changed. And then you're gonna see, I promise you this, 10 years from now, when we're talking about like Juju Watkins as a star of the WNBA, and for your audience who doesn't know who she is, she's an amazing freshman basketball player at USC who may turn out to be the greatest basketball player of all time. You watch what their kind of economics will be 10 years from now and say 2034. And that's where you see the growth. And that's where you see things change society-wise.
Well, you mentioned the NBA, though, but the NBA wasn't always that big a deal. I mean, there was a time when the NBA was tiny compared to, you know, Major League Baseball and the NFL. Tan, do you think there's, you know, that it might take a little more time, but that the WNBA could catch up to that kind of NBA profile?
I absolutely agree, because you are bringing in now new viewers, right? So there's many women that weren't as into sports as they will be when they see women playing. And so we also see on the male side, there's little boys that are interested now in women's basketball. So we're growing an entirely new market, and with new markets come new streams of income. So I think it's entirely possible, maybe not tomorrow, but at some point in the future, for women's sports to be, or for us to have, you know, those Michael Jordan level players in women's sports.
Yeah. Richard, what kind of impact could the Paris Olympics have on the future of women's sports? Do you think it's going to play a significant role in kind of where we see women's sports go in the future?
Yeah. I mean, I think just in the sense that you're seeing these incredible athletes pulling off these incredible feats, you know, and I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but you'll see Sydney McLaughlin Leveroni, one of the great hurdlers of all time, compete. She'll probably win a gold. And all this stuff, and as Tan said, all this stuff matters, because you're gonna have young girls watching this Paris Olympics coverage who are whatever, 5, 10, 12. They'll look at that and say, this could be me one day. And they'll wanna, you know, compete and enter sports. And the good news now is that there's just so much more opportunity for them to like literally go and compete, go and practice, have school teams. So yeah, all of this stuff matters. It's like everything else in life. You have to be able to see something in front of you to actually believe it can happen. And that's in many ways sort of the importance of things like the Paris Olympics or the WNBA, is it gives people like real visible evidence to become what they're seeing in front of them.
Tanith, that whole representation matters, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University Assistant Professor of Law, Tan Boston, and Senior Writer for The Athletic, covering sports media, Richard Deitch. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.